The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 1021. It's the 19th of March, 2018. On the podcast today, I have João Andrade, CEO, and Professor Peter Holland, Chief Scientific Officer of Widecells Group. And they discuss their grant by the government-backed Innovate UK Knowledge Transfer Partnership for their stem cell research. Also on the podcast, Tom Winifred talks about the UK Investor Show, which is just over a month away. It's on Saturday, the 21st of April. You can get free investor class tickets, by the way, if you use the code VOX. And anyway, Tom talks about that, what you can expect if you go there, and also mentions two companies he likes he owns shares in. That's Reach4 Entertainment, R4E, and Optibiotics. Opti is ticker there. Plus, as it's a Monday, I have Malky, Oil and Gas Sector Authority there, talking about Range Resources, Columbus Energy Resources, Touchstone Exploration, Trinity Exploration, Rockrose Energy, and Lamprell. And also, market analyst with SpreadX, Connor Campbell, talks about companies releasing news this week, including Ocado, Kingfisher, and Next. And as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is João Andrade, Chief Executive Officer, and Professor Peter Hollands, Chief Scientific Officer of Widecells Group, that's WDC. Guys, thanks for joining me.
Hi, Justin.
Hi, Justin. Good morning.
Good morning, both of you. I know you've got some exciting news out. You've been granted a government-backed Innovate UK Knowledge Transfer Partnership for stem cell research, which is very exciting. We'll get into that, explain what it means in a bit. Before we do, João, for people listening who are not aware of what Widecells does, can you give a brief summary, please?
Yes. So, Widecells Group, we are a worldwide provider of stem cell services. The group is composed of three divisions. One of them is CellPlan, which is a world's first global stem cell insurance plan to cover all the costs associated with stem cell treatments for families that have stored their baby's umbilical cord blood stem cells to protect them against future illness. In Widecells division, we have the Institute of Stem Cell Technology, where we have technology to process and store stem cells and also to conduct groundbreaking stem cell research. And the third strand of the business is Wide Academy, which is an education and training division to promote awareness of the benefits of stem cell technology to both healthcare professionals and the general population.
Marvelous stuff. Like you just said there, Widecells, you know, is an end-to-end sort of stem cell provider, service provider there. And today's news is all about research. So how does the research side of things fit into the business, João?
Well, we have our three strategic divisions. They all support each other. So with Wide Academy, we educate and train medical professionals on the benefits of stem cell technology, both treatments and storage, so they can then recommend it to their patients. Then if a family decides to store their baby's umbilical cord blood stem cells, for example, they can do it with us, with the Widecells division. And then if they need to use it in the future, we have the world's first stem cell insurance plan to cover the costs associated with treatment. Now, it's very important if we want to keep on providing the best service to our clients to drive and to be part of the next generation of stem cell technology. And for that reason, we have established the Institute of Stem Cell Technology in the University of Manchester, where we are, again, not only storing stem cells, but getting involved with research projects as well, mainly contract research and now this knowledge transfer partnership funded by Innovate UK. And this is our part in driving the next generation of stem cell technology.
Okay, excellent. And Peter, can you tell us a bit more about what this research project is, please?
Yeah, so we've been very fortunate to receive a KTP, Knowledge Transfer Partnership Award from Innovate UK. And what this does, it provides funds for us to do various things. First of all, we can employ a postdoctoral scientist to actually help us on a day-to-day basis with this work. And secondly, we'll have the funds to actually carry out the work, so money for consumables, equipment and so on to actually do the work. So we'll be working with our colleagues at Manchester Metropolitan University, and we'll be working on a subject called induced pluripotent stem cells, which is a bit of a mouthful, and iPSC is probably easier. And what we do here is it's possible to create stem cells from normal adult cells. So you can take adult blood cells or adult skin cells or whatever, introduce new genes into them, and as a result of that, the stem cells sort of go back in time and they become stem cells again. So the adult cells, become stem cells again. And that's really important. It helps us to understand disease. But the purpose of this particular project is to develop clinical grade iPSCs. So here we've got to work out all the procedures and the quality management and the technology, and we have to meet the regulatory requirements so that we can develop clinical grade iPSCs, which are extremely important, because at the moment most of these things are created in research labs, and they're not actually created to clinical grade, so they can't routinely be used in patients. So it's an extremely important project, probably one of the most exciting stem cell products that I've ever been involved in, and we were absolutely delighted.
Yeah, well, do you know what? Innovate UK are providing the funding, and I know a lot of listeners probably listening have heard of them and their involvement in certain projects. But can you explain, Jaron, maybe, you know, who are they and what's the significance of their involvement here?
So Innovate UK are a government-based organisation, and they are able to provide money for so-called knowledge transfer partnerships. And this brings together two people. So, for example, in our case, there's iPSC expertise in Manchester Metropolitan University, and there is clinical grade production experience in wide cells. And bringing those together makes a unique product that would not happen otherwise. So Innovate UK are brilliant from that point of view, because they enable these collaborations to take place.
Excellent stuff. Okay, and I should have asked you that Peter rather than Jared, but looking ahead, yeah. Then, Peter, what is the potential of these new types of stem cells, both for the industry and the impact of wide cells involvement, and what happens, you know, early stage here?
Yeah, so these iPSCs are extremely important. They were discovered about 10 or so years ago, and since then there's been a lot of basic laboratory research. And people have shown that they can be used to treat disease, so cell therapy, to treat a whole range of diseases. They can be used to study disease, and so that they can be used in the laboratory to create what we call organoids, which are effectively tiny little versions of organs. So you can get brain organoids or kidney or liver, and it enables you to study the actual tissue in the laboratory. Perhaps one of the most important roles is to actually test pharmaceuticals. So you can take cells from a person, make iPSCs, and then if that person needs a particular treatment using pharmaceuticals, you can test each one on the iPSCs and develop so-called personalized medicine. Mm-hmm. So instead of just hitting someone with the basic drug, you actually know that drug is personalized to that particular patient. So the potential of these is absolutely enormous. The involvement of wide cells is critical, because it enables the clinical side to be achieved. And the involvement of MMU is also critical, because they've got the basic expertise. So exciting times, and we're really looking forward to this one.
Excellent stuff. Okay, so finally, Jao, at the end of the research project, you're going to hopefully have a new type of stem cell treatment that can be commercialised. So how will this affect, you know, your current sort of business offering there?
Well, after the project is completed, the knowledge transfer partnership will, we believe, enable White Cells Group to become the first UK company to be in a position to bring clinical grades iPSCs to the general market. And this can be done now at scale. That's what we believe it's going to happen once we complete the projects. And that will encompass developing a manufacturing frozen banking facility in Manchester for our clinical grade iPSCs. And the point is that incorporating clinical grade iPSC technology into our services fits perfectly into our company's vision of making stem cell treatment more affordable and accessible globally.
Excellent stuff. Well, Joe, if someone's listening to this and likes the sound of what you're doing here, but are not following the story yet, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, we are a worldwide provider of stem cell services. Without all our products have no geographical barriers. We have first mover advantage on our stem cell insurance plan, and we are the first in the world to do so, to provide a product and insurance product of this nature. We have innovative education and training programs, which we believe are going to increase the uptake for stem cell storage and stem cell treatments. And we have our own state-of-the-art facility in Manchester, where we can conduct groundbreaking research, but also be in a position to store stem cells from anywhere, any family that's in the UK or Europe. And all our products have the ability to generate revenue. And this is a very scalable business.
Excellent stuff, Joe. Peter, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast now is somebody who I thought would never come on the Clowns Podcast. It's Tom Winifred. You all right, fella?
I'm fine. How's life in the cardboard box?
it's fine. It's a very luxurious cardboard box, but it's very nice. And so first and foremost, Tom, how are you doing, and why are you coming on the podcast, the Clowns Podcast?
I'm coming on, well, there you go. Just to show that I'm a reasonable man, don't tell anyone. I've got a reputation for being complete to preserve, so that's a secret. I'm coming on to talk about the UK Investor Show. Okay. You're probably going to edit that out for me swearing, but never mind. I'm coming to talk about the UK Investor Show on April 21st, which I've sold the UK Investor Show to Nigel Ray's family. So it's the last one that I'm involved in a big way, and I'm keen to go out on a bang.
Yeah. So tell us, if someone goes there, if someone's never been there before, what can they expect? What's the advantage for going there and turning up and meeting companies there?
Well, it's partly the companies. So there are 130 companies which are there on the day. The UK Investor Show is by far and away the biggest one-day investor show. So 130 companies, of which about 75 will do a presentation of 20 minutes, but all of them will be there all day on the stands. Now, obviously, you and I know that not all CEOs tell the truth. But if you've got shares in a company, go along, talk to the people involved, give them a hard time. You know, these people have paid a lot of money. Go along and say, why the hell are you earning 400,000 quid a year and am I 95% down? So take out your anger on them. But seriously, you ask questions, you find out about them. Not all the companies there will be good. We're not endorsing any of them. Some of them, I think, are very good companies and I own shares in them. And I think there's a chance for people to go and learn more about why they're so exciting. So there's the companies. The other thing about the show is that we have an incredible cast of big name speakers on the main stage. Now, some shows take payment from people to appear on the stage, and so they have speakers who aren't household names even in their own household. The people who are speaking at UK Investor Show are there because they're friends of mine or of Nigel Ray or both. We're not paying them. They don't tend to do any other shows, but they really are big names. They're people who know what they're doing. You know, my favourite, obviously apart from myself and Nigel Ray, is Vin Muria, who is known as the Queen of Tech. She started her life rescuing her dad's corner store in Coventry, and they lived above the shop. She's now worth several hundred million, having created, built up, floated a number of software businesses, done buy and build, which so many people talk about as if it's simple, but most people cock it up. She's done it brilliantly and then exited. So she's an incredible entrepreneur, and what she says about technology is fantastic. Mark Slater, the UK's top performing fund manager over 10 years. You just can't argue with his data. Again, he's always a wonderful speaker. He tells a dirty joke, talks about where he sees the markets, but then talks about specifically what stocks he's buying and selling. It's a unique opportunity to hear people like that. To hear Nigel Ray, Britain's Buffett, he'll be chatting with Paul Scott about value investing, about what he's buying and selling. Again, that is a unique opportunity. I'll be doing a session on Neil Woodford, trying to expose the myth behind Britain's most conceited fund manager in light of his appalling performance, asking some very tough questions. We invited Woodford to come to the show and answer those questions. He's chickened out, so we'll be asking them anyway. There are some real questions about related party deals, transactions between his funds, valuations, etc., and I'll be asking those questions. So that'll be very controversial. No doubt there'll be lawyers for Woodford present. We're used to having lawyers at the show. We don't hold back. So it's a chance to hear people who you're just not going to hear it anywhere else.
Yeah, and do you know what the nice thing is that actually you can speak to CEOs. And I did a Twitter sort of poll on the weekend saying, if a board of directors has no shares in their company, does that put you off investing? 92% of people, this is about 900 people took part in this in one day survey, 92% of people said it does put them off. So they can go there, I suppose, and ask a CEO, why don't you have shares in your company? And how important do you think is that?
You're absolutely right, Justin, your listeners, they're absolutely right. We're looking this. I was doing a podcast yesterday about both Deutsche Bank and Conviviality, and this is one of the problems with capitalism today: is that you have company after company after company where the management own bugger all of the equity. They're not entrepreneurs; they haven't risked their own capital, or they risk nothing but minimal amounts, and other people risk the capital. They get telephone number salaries. They get options, which are a one-way bet. If the shares go through the roof, you coin it in. If they tank, you don't lose anything. You don't risk any capital at all. They get huge salaries. Their motive is to empire build, to do risky acquisitions with other people's money. Because if it works, they coin it in. If it doesn't work, well, you see with Conviviality, Diana Hunter earned almost £1 million last year. She's screwed it up big time. She's burned £300 million of other people's money. And what's going to happen? She's going to get a payoff of £450,000 and a consultancy deal. Shareholders will lose nearly all their money. That is a real problem. And one of the red flags about Conviviality, there are many of them, by the way, wafer thin margins, industry having real problems, too much debt, too many acquisitions. But one of the real red flags there is the fact that disconnect between the ownership of the company, its shareholders, and the management. Total disconnect.
Yeah. Okay, listen, I used to listen to your Bearcast all the time, but it's a paid for thing now. Is that the case?
It is indeed.
Okay.
We've put share profits behind a paywall. You and I know that advertising, all of the growth in online advertising has gone to the evil Google, Facebook, evil Google and Facebook. So the advertising revenue for people who actually create content has gone down dramatically. And we've seen that on share profits. So we took the view, we will charge people for it. And that means that instead of running it at a loss, we're running it at break even. And I've actually been able to give two of my writers, or one writer, a pay rise. I'll be giving a second one a pay rise in a couple of weeks. And we're giving people pay rises as the readership grows. And I think running businesses at break even or a small profit is viable and sustainable. Running them at a loss is just not sustainable. I'm too old and too bored to do that. Okay. So I'd far rather podcast to a couple of thousand people and break even than podcast to far more and lose money.
Yeah, yeah. Well, do you know what? Like I said, there's a place for a bullcast, a bearcast, and a bullcast. This is more a bullcast. And I've had a couple of people say, you never highlight the bear case. And I said, well, Tom does that. I mean, you have to do your own research on anything you invest in. But so, Tom, you said you're invested in certain companies at the show. Name one or two that you're invested in and give us a couple of reasons why you like them.
I'm invested in Reach for Entertainment. Reach for Entertainment is a theatrical agency, one in New York, one in London. If you look at the core businesses, they've always been profitable. There is a real visibility of earnings. It's just this company has been grotesquely mismanaged and has had too much debt. Both of those things have been resolved. by a recent fundraise and by the appointment of a really good new CEO who's put a hell of a lot of his own money into the business. That's critical. Seven-figure sum into the business himself. That is really, really important. So I think this business will deliver and is on a relatively low P, and there's great earnings visibility there. So R for E is one of them. The other one is my single biggest holding, Optibiotics. This company continues to sign licensing deals for its microbiomes. There are no forecasts in the market, and that's the real problem. People are having to guess what profits will be. But if you listen to what the company says about the size of the contracts it signed, do your maths, look at the fixed overhead. This is a company which could quite plausibly be on a very low single-figure PE, not this year, but next year. And this year it will be profitable. That is far from discounted in the share price. I got in this one at 8p. They're now just in the low 60s. I think so I've done all right, but I think they could easily double from here.
Okay, marvellous stuff. All right, well, Tom, just before you go, I just remind people again how they can get tickets for your show.
Good. Well done. Well remembered, Justin. Go to www.ukinvestorshow.com/tickets. Order an investor class ticket and use the promotional code VOX, V-O-X, and you will have one sent to you very soon. If you look at the website, the UK Investor Show website, you'll see details of all the speakers, of the companies exhibiting. And I hope very much that you'll be there, Justin. I will be there. There'll be about 3,500 people there on April 21st in London, in Westminster at the QE2 Centre. Hopefully Paul Scott will go to the right venue. Last year he went to the wrong one. It will be a great day. So I hope to see you and all of your listeners there.
Marvellous. Well, Tom, you may see me there. Thanks for coming on, fella.
Okay, goodbye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
It's a Monday morning or afternoon, depends when you listen to the podcast, but it's a Monday, that's what I'm trying to say. And it's a Monday. Malky's here, Oil and Gas Sector Authority. You all right, Malky?
I'm very well indeed. Thick snow outside and cold, but very well indeed, thank you.
Yeah, I suppose it's immaterial, I suppose, but I wonder how all this cold weather would have an effect on the amount of use, you know, of oil and gas. I don't know if it has any effect at all, really, does it? I don't know if
it varies, really. I mean, people use more heating oil. But then, you know, if you look at the States, for example, when they have all that thick snow you see around on the East Coast and so on, they use much more for heating, but then they can't get around, so there's much less used on gasoline. So
exactly,
it
yeah.
swings
yeah.
and roundabouts a bit.
Yeah, I suppose so, exactly. Okay, cool, Malky. So what are we kicking off with? What's the first company you're looking at?
Well, this is a sort of theme which has come up, and I'm not blaming it on the fact that I've been there, but, you know, the theme at the moment is Trinidad-based companies, mm-hmm. because you remember I went there a couple of weeks ago, but we had a really cracking set of figures from Trinity, which I spoke about last week, and then last week on Friday we had a really interesting set of figures from Range Resources, which I'm going to talk about. Today we've had an announcement of a deal from Columbus Energy, which is a very exciting little stock. And then again last week we had operational review from Touchstone, which is the sort of fourth in the quadruplet or whatever of Trinidad companies. So I'm going to have a word about those. So I'll start off with Range Resources, because they had a big set of figures on Friday. I'm really happy with those. I mean, obviously, you know, your listeners will, some of them will go back a very long way with Range Resources. I mentioned them last week because I've been out to see them, so I won't add much more than the figures, which were good enough. Certainly, it was really good to see production up, 22% production increase there, mainly from their water flood program, which is going pretty well. But also, if you remember, I mentioned that they had a CPR during the year, which proved up to be, you know, to be an exciting 16 million standard barrels of 2P net 2P reserves and 2C resources of 8 million. So that looked good. And of course, they've got other areas like Indonesia, where they made a small acquisition, which is looking quite interesting. And they've got the drilling rig company, where they've acquired that drilling rig company, and it provides them with a sort of Trinidad-based fleet of very modern rigs, which is good for two things. First of all, when you look at it and see that they've got the flexibility to drill their own stuff when they want to with high quality kit, and of course they can hire it out to other people as well. So all in all, the Range was suspended for an awful lot of last year. As I say, they have some dreadful history going back into the sort of Peter Landau age, but nowadays taking real advantage of Trinidad, which is very, you know, it's always been there, but it's up and coming at the moment because they've got four companies all with very lively, very exciting managements. So that'll move me on to the second one, which is Columbus Energy Resources, CERP.
Yep.
And today they've announced the renegotiation of their, what they call their Bolt transaction. Bolt stands for the beach oil field, which they were in a bit of a mess with, to be honest. Previous management, because they've got this new guy called Leo Coote, who's running the thing now extremely well. Previous management had, to be honest, got themselves into a bit of a state here. They only had 25% of it. What looked like some very peculiar, for want of a better expression, royalty numbers, and so they needed to do this, and they've done it very well. Bolt is on the southwest of Trinidad, the Southwest Peninsula. The SWP, as it's called, and it does contain the Bonassi oil field, which is not producing. Well, it is producing about tiny amount, about 10 barrels a day at the moment. But what they've done is they've completely restructured the thing. They've got back to 100%. You know, clearly they've got overriding royalties to pay, but it won't be they're capped so that there's no they can't get hoodwinked on that one anymore. And you know, there's quite a lot of barrels in place in that area. They say 200 to 400 million barrels in place. They can finance all this from their existing 2018 budget, which is interesting because there will be a number of things to do here. I'm expecting to see them restructure the thing and to reactivate the Bonassi oil field. I would expect them to increase production there in due course. And then next year, I would have thought they'll have a drilling campaign in their own right. So I think that I would suggest that at the moment it's one of those things that, you know, really positive for Columbus. Leo Coote is picking this company up with real desire. I think he's got ambitions to make acquisitions and so on, and this will continue. So good news from Columbus. Mm-hmm. And finally, I mentioned Touchstone. Yeah. They had an operational review last week, and they too are in a strong position. They've increased their production. I'm expecting, you know, they've said that I think it's Wednesday of last week they announced that their production was, you know, something like 1,550 barrels a day. Excuse me. And with high oil prices, they're doing as you might expect. The target is 2,000 barrels a day. I'm sure they'll make that in due course. They're adding a second rig to accelerate their 2018 drilling program and increase production. So I'm sure they'll stick in with their expected numbers there. So, let's say, 2 weeks ago we had figures from Trinity. We've now had something from all four of the Trinidad companies, and they're all poised to be very exciting.
Yeah, and it seems like Trinity, I think, were covered in the Daily Mail, weren't they, over the weekend? So, if I'm looking at this right, and it says, they're up 15 or 16% because that Midas share tip. So,
that's right, yeah.
They're probably reading your stuff, Malky, I think, no doubt.
I hope so, because they are in very strong position, and I expect more to come from Trinity, because in terms of them, they're probably the most profitable. They're probably one of the most profitable companies that I cover across the whole board. They're certainly an incredibly strong position, having restructured. They very nearly went to the wall a couple of years ago, but they've done very well. Cut a good deal with the Trinidad Energy Ministry and Finance Ministry, and on that basis, I think one would, you know, think that they're in a very strong position.
Excellent, Marky. Thanks for that Monday morning update, and we'll speak to you next week.
I've got a couple more.
Oh, go on. Sorry.
Time for a couple of quick ones.
Yeah, no, certainly. I thought you said there was a last one just then. I was going to say.
No, that was the last one on Trinidad.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
I rather overstuffed the bucket with Trinidad stuff.
Yeah, but, go on.
A quick word on Rock Rose, which quite a lot of your guys will have, I think, because it's been a very successful business picking up production, and they paid a whopping great special dividend a couple of months ago, if you remember, a month ago. Mm-hmm. They announced on Friday that they've got two sets of evaluations or CPRs being done on their assets, and it's interesting to see here that the production assets that they've picked up are already looking like they're doing better than they expected. So they're not only increasing the size of them, but extending the life of them. So, you know, very positive news for Rock Rose. I expect both those CPRs to come in and make the acquisitions that they've made look that much cheaper. And then finally, a little one which one or two of you guys might remember called Lamprell, which has had a sort of, which is a, It makes rigs and all sorts of it's based out in the UAE. They announced, some time ago that they were doing a joint venture in Saudi Arabia, which potentially could have had a huge upside potential for the company, because they would be tying in with some very, very big players out there. Good news for Lamprell and their holders on Friday was that the Saudi Arabian joint venture is up and running. The RMI business in their maritime yard is being underway at Ras Al Khair. And the good news for them is particularly because, as part of the deal, one of the companies in the JV is going to commit to buying 20 jackups over the next 10 years, jackup rigs over the next 10 years, which, of course, Lamprell will build. And it'll take a couple of years to get the maritime yard facilities fully underway. So the first, maybe two or four of those will probably be built at the Lamprell yard in the UAE. So the order book beginning to fill up again. It's a bit of feast and famine out there for Lamprell, but things looking much better for this very, very interesting and well-run rig manufacturer in the Middle East.
Marvellous. Cool. That's LAM ticker, by the way. Mars, and that's it. Malachi, is there any more?
Yeah, it really is this time. Sorry, Justin.
That's all right, fella. Cheers, and more the merrier, anyway. Malachi, speak next week, fella.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Bye now.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is market analyst with Spreadex. It's Connor Campbell. You all right, Connor?
Very good, thank you.
Excellent stuff. Okay, we're looking at the companies, bigger companies, releasing news this week. Who's first up?
We've got Ocado on Tuesday. It's their first quarter figures on Tuesday. Obviously, it's had absolutely ridiculous, I think, since November. So what, like 3 or 4 months? I think since late November, it's risen 154% based on, you know, the two sort of software automated warehouse deals it's announced with Group Casino in France and Sobeys in Canada. You know, those long-awaited, for ages, investors were desperate for some kind of international tie-up, and then they got two within the space of 3 months, and it sort of sent the stock rocketing higher. And then you've also had people speculate, I think analysts at Peel Hunt were speculating that with Amazon... with Amazon buying Whole Foods and now Ocado sort of strengthening its hand internationally, you could have companies like Walmart and Kroger bidding for Ocado. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, Ocado's sort of value at the moment is all driven by these international deals, because its full year figures in February weren't that great. I think group revenue was up 12.7%. to 1.46 billion, which was good. However, it swung from a pre-tax profit of 12 million the year before to a pre-tax loss of half a million, which really isn't great. And it sort of, I think it also said that its 2018 earnings would sort of reflect the fixed costs of improving its technology and making it, appealing for these international companies. Yeah. It also then had to raise 150 million through a 5% share placing. So people, a lot of analysts took that full year full year update in February, sort of a covert profit warning, not explicitly stating that things are going to be a lot worse in 2018, but the company hinting at, you know, there is a cost behind attracting these international companies. So it's interesting, you sort of got, I think, and this is really reflected in how our traders are behaving, it's really, really mixed in terms of buyers and sellers between £5.75 and £6. And that £6 mark being not far off Ocado's all-time highs, which I think were around 4 years ago. And I think, I guess there's going to be investors caught between two minds. Those looking for some kind of financial payoff in the medium term, you know, if it's pre-tax, it's, you know, operating at a pre-tax loss. People are going to want to see some kind of payoff for these international deals. So you've got those investors on one hand versus the ones that are happy to ride out these losses if it means that Ocado keeps attracting bigger and better offers internationally. And I guess those holding out for some kind of deal in the US. I think that's why we've seen, from our clients' perspective, it almost evenly split between buyers and sellers between that £5.75, £6 mark.
Yeah. But it's, you know what, like I said, it has risen quite quickly, hasn't it, in the last, I'm just checking it out on a daily chart there, because it's risen, like I said, from November, it was down at 236, and now it's 580, you know, so it's a heck of a rise, isn't it, you know?
Yeah, that's crazy.
So I'd be surprised if they don't have a little pullback here, but because they've tested that £6 level, and it's failed there once, so it'll be interesting to see if they break through that again, because that's obviously a bit of resistance here on the chart. Okay, cool. What's next, Connor?
We've got Kingfisher on Wednesday. Obviously, Kingfisher best known for B&Q and Screwfix over here, and then in France, got Brico Depot and I think it's Castorama. It's had a really mixed bag of data the last few times it's released figures. I think back, its half-year figures back in September, like half-year like-for-like sales were down 2%, but total sales were up 4.3%. And they managed to eke out a sort of forecast-beating 0.9% rising underlying pre-tax profit to £440 million. And it announced a £60 million share buyback. So overall, it was sort of a positive outlook in September. But they've got a few really strict lines of division. So for example, in the UK, like-for-like sales were up 1.1%, and in Poland, they were up 3.8%, but they were down 4.6% in France being a big part of the business. Then if you sort of narrow in on the UK itself, I think B&Q keeps seeing these like-for-like sales declines. Part of this is to do with it's one Kingfisher sort of transformation strategy, which is aiming to deliver £500 million extra in pre-tax profit, I think, for the years after 2021.
Yeah.
I think 2021 or 2022. So B&Q like-for-like sales down 2.3% for the half year, countered by a huge 11.7% rise in like-for-likes at Screwfix. And those kinds of divisions continued into the third quarter. I think UK like-for-likes were up 1.5%, with B&Q down 1.9%, Screwfix up 10.9%. In France, like-for-like sales were down 4.1%, which is obviously an improvement on the 4.6% half-year decline, but still bad. And then in Poland, like-for-likes were up 6%. I think total like-for-like sales were down 0.5%. But again, it's this really mixed bag of business that makes it hard to get a read on Kingfisher, because some aspects of it are doing so well. And then you've got stuff like France and B&Q that are really dragging the overall total down. I mean, in terms of what investors, ideally, if Kingfisher can post another beat on its underlying pre-tax profit, then maybe that can be the headline figure coming out of its full-year figures on Wednesday night, distract from the likely sort of mix-up of numbers between France and the UK and Screwfix and B&Q. In terms of our clients, however, I think they're not even though, you know, Kingfisher's got this transformation plan on the horizon and the company said that's on track, blah, 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 our clients, I don't think, are willing to stick around, and we've seen them start selling the stock around £3.50.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? They've been on a share repurchase program, haven't they, for a while, which obviously helps and does, you know, massage the earnings per share. But so I'm looking here. When was it? 22nd of December, they completed the first of this, and they spent, what, about £40 million on a share buyback there in cancellation. And now they start another £20 million. So, yeah, I mean, it's a hard market there, isn't it? The market they're in is very hard. Retail is hard, you know, and it's almost, unless stocks are majorly beaten up, you know, overly beaten up, I don't see much opportunity. Having said that, if you're in, if you manage to get about £3 to 190, then you've seen a nice little profit now because they're at 346. But well, I don't know. Like you said, is there any, you know, in that market, is there any sort of clear winner out and out? You know, I mean, it seems like everything's just going online, doesn't it? Pretty much, you know.
Yeah.
But there we are. At the moment, the chart, it's like, it's in dangerous ground here because it's in middle ground. It's not at a low, not at a high, it's right in the middle. And so you're thinking, where can it go from here? At least if you're at the bottom, you think, well, it could go. There's a good chance it'll go up from here, or top, good chance it'll go down. And so that range pretty much is between £3 and £3.80, and at the moment they're at £3.40. I would like to call it, but there we are. We'll see what the figures suggest. I doubt if it's going to sort of, it's going to be amazing. People will stand back. Wow, amazing figures. I doubt it very much. But okay, anything else, Connor?
Yeah, finally we've got Next on Friday. They sort of had a really like a typical roller coaster of a year last year. I think you're sort of gapping every time it released. Released a new update, basically.
But they're very good, though. Next, are very good at forward selling bad news, overly selling bad news, and then coming out with a surprising update, which like, oh, it's not that bad. There is some silver linings there. So they've done that a couple of times. Whenever they've done an update, they have gapped up because they've overly sold the bad news, but maybe overdone it. But we'll see now if they're settling, because they said they hit an all-time, almost a multi-year low, didn't they? When was that? Back in September of last year. And they've gradually been grinding upwards. We'll see if they can continue. So what do you reckon? What's the thoughts here?
Yeah, well, like you were saying, it's sort of all of this management of bad news, really. In the third quarter in November, it warned that trading had been extremely volatile. I think the stock plunged 9% on that news. I think retail sales were down 7.7%. The directory, i.e. the online sales, were up 13.2%. Total full price sales were up 1.3%. That kind of split has been the case for the entire year. And in fourth quarter in January, retail sales fell 6.1%. Online sales jumped 13.6%. So broadly in line with what was said in the third quarter. But then the stock jumped 6%. That's partially because it revised up every single one of its sort of three key metrics basically for the full year in that fourth quarter report. So, you know, kept forecasts low throughout the year. So then I think it said that it's now expecting total full price sales, including currency gains, to rise 0.3%. That's a shift from the previous guidance, was a fall of 0.3%. So again, they are over the negative a lot of the time. I think pre-tax profit is still expected to fall 8.3% to $725 million, which isn't great, but that's better than the previous estimate of a 9.3% drop to $717 million. And then earnings per share are expected to fall 5.7%. Again, I think better than the 6.8% previously guided. So I think what is going to be the case on Friday is, well, have Next undersold again, and will these full year figures be slightly better than the guidance they gave back in January? Because that could be the case. They also gave a little look at their figures for this upcoming year. I think they're expecting full price sales to jump 1.1%, earnings per share 1.1%. They're still expecting a drop in pre-tax profit, but only by 2.8%. So an improvement across the board there. Which, again, you know, if Next are underselling again, that could suggest something a bit brighter in the year ahead. But obviously, like we were just saying with Kingfisher, the retail sector is incredibly tough at the moment, especially for a high street clothing store like Next. But if you look at the online stuff, there is still clearly an appetite for Next. It's just more a case of declining footfall in the high street in total, rather than, I guess, something like M&S, which just doesn't seem to have the product to attract people. At least Next online sales suggest that Next line of clothing and things like that are at least attractive to customers. They just aren't buying them in stores, basically. From our client's perspective, they're buying around the 47.50 mark. I think they're perhaps hoping for a slight beat on the figures on Friday, because, like you said, Next have a tendency to downplay things in advance.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just looking at the chart there, if you look at the granddaddy of the moving averages, was the 200-day moving average, and they tend to say the price below that is in bearish territory, above it in a bullish. I mean, they did cut above that. When was that? Septemberish, and they've been above that. They bounced. They tested it once, just dipped below it. The start of 2018. They're still above that. So, Is this the start of a trend back towards where they're never going to get back up to 80 quid? I mean, they're 47 quid now, but I mean, maybe somewhere halfway towards that, you know. But we'll see. We'll see how the progress is. Again, it's retail. It's hard work. Unless the share is overly beaten up, I wouldn't even care to look at it because it's a tough market. It's not getting any easier in that space, is it? Let's be honest. Connor, thanks for that, fella, and we'll speak next week.
Till next week. Thanks very much.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are as follows. At five, Weatherly International, WTI. At four, Trinity Exploration and Production, as Trin and Malky mentioned those earlier. At three, Rio Bold Resources, RBD. At two, Micro Focus International. It's unusual to see a big cap in that list there. There we go. Our number one most followed company is Thor Mining, THR. Okay, time for the top five most liked RNSs. At five, Armadale Capital. 31-year mine plan completed for Mihangi Liandu Graphite Project. That's ACP. I've written a blog on those, actually. Worth reading, by all means. Just go on the page there at Vox, you know, at ACP page to search, and you'll see the link to the blog there. At four, Thor Mining, Copper Resource, Kapunda Project, South Australia. At three, Anglo-African Oil and Gas, operational update. At two, Motif Bio, MTFB, Motif Bio to present at upcoming conferences. And number one, most liked RNS, was from Hummingbird Resources. That's a positive ramp-up update at the Yanfolila Gold Mine. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Storm Winifred, I'm delighted that Vox Markets will be joining us at the UK Investor Show on April 21st in London. Top name speakers, Mark Slater, Nigel Ray, Vin Murrier, myself, Matt Earle. 130 companies presenting, people you really want to meet. Get a free ticket now. Go to www.ukinvestorshow.com/tickets and use the promotional code VOX and it'll be sent at once.